Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details. Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now save $30 on the American-made Steel FS56 RCE trimmer. Real Steel. The FS56 RCE is made in America of U.S. and global materials. Offer valid through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Good morning. What a night. Woo. It is time to skip the BS. It's time for Undisputed. It's time for Paul Pierce and Keyshawn Johnson and me to dive deep into back-to-back all-time shocking finishes to last night's Game 2s in New York, then in Denver. But we got to start with the Lakers and the Nuggets. Lakers were up 20 with 10 minutes left in the third quarter. They're up 10 going to the fourth quarter. They're up 8 with 6 minutes left. They obviously should have won, and once again, they did not. The Nuggets have now beaten them 10 straight times. Yes, the Nuggets prove once again they are the Lakers' daddies by outscoring them 57-40 in the second half. LeBron came very close to playing an all-time great fourth quarter, finally played the way he's capable of playing after 5 straight epic fails against Denver in fourth quarters of playoff games. But in the bitter end, LeBron was able to get free of KCP so completely that KCP went sliding away from him, leaving LeBron unguarded, wide open for a three that would have won it. Maybe would have changed LeBron's legacy. He had his Michael Jordan moment. He had his push-off of Brian Russell, Game 6 in Utah. He had it. He had it. And he left it just a little short. And it missed, and Jamal Murray, the best clutch closer in the NBA, everything LeBron is not, capped off a 14-point fourth quarter by hitting a fadeaway over the outstretched long arm of the law of Anthony Davis at the buzzer. Game set and probably first-round matchup for the Lakers. So, Paul, before we get to you, what do you got on there? Aha!
T-shirt, you know.
Yeah.
A little something.
Yeah.
Oh, man. If this wasn't a who's your daddy moment game, then I don't know what was, Key. How you feeling this morning, man?
I'm good. Better worry about me. I'm straight.
You get some sleep?
No, really, but I'm good. You know you're not going to get no sleep when you're invested in something.
By the way, maybe I should get a Who's Your Daddy shirt to wear against Paul because I'm now up 2 dinners on you. I don't know if you noticed.
But you had the Lakers in this series, and ultimately the Lakers are not going to win.
You really went out and made that shirt.
All right, so, Paul, how and why did the Nuggets keep coming back to win this instant classic?
Skip, it's the same story each and every game. The Lakers come out hot. They get a lead. They squander the lead. Nuggets come back, and they win. On one hand, the Lakers look like they can beat anybody in the world.
That is true.
They got AD, who's one of the – he looked like he was the best player in the world for 3 quarters. And I said this, that on any given night, AD can be the best player in the world, which he was yesterday for three quarters. The Lakers just start reverting back to old habits. I mean, second half, they give up the 3, they don't play defense, and they hope that somehow magically that the Denver Nuggets will go away no matter what the lead is. So I'll tell you what happened. Joker was Joker, obviously. And this is what I want to say. AD, the all-defensive finalist, came out yesterday, and he was somewhat pissed off that he wasn't on the list.
I think he was very.
He was pissed off that he wasn't on the list. Well, we see why now. You had opportunity after opportunity to come up with big stop after big stop, and he couldn't do it. Now, that's not to say he's not a good defender. He's a good defender. He's a really good defender. But when you're playing the best in the world, this is your opportunity to show it. Mm. On the other hand, I thought LeBron played the perfect game, actually. You know, on the other nights, he came out aggressive. He had no energy for the fourth quarter. This game two, he was like, all right, I'm going to let the other guys carry us. If it's close, I'll win it at the end. He preserved some energy. And I was like, that's exactly what they need from LeBron. He needs something left in the tank in the fourth quarter. And in the fourth quarter, he scored 12 points, two huge threes. He got an and one. He got another layup. And I was like, all right, the Lakers are going to win this. But on the flip side, I thought Jamal Murray did everything in his power to say, here, Lakers, this is your guys' game tonight.
He couldn't
make a shot. He was terrible in the pick and roll.
Yeah.
He didn't defend. And then the fourth quarter comes and he just flips the switch. Him and Joker. He comes down, they're down two, makes a shot. Joker, three straight plays, scores on Anthony Davis, one-on-one. One-on-one. They had been playing this guy great all day. Joker had 10 points and 10 rebounds in the first quarter. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, whoa, this is going to be a big night. Then they slowed him down a little bit. Then he picked it back up in the second half. And now that's just me seeing the Lakers revert back to old habits, which is I thought they had a great game plan for him. They were doubling him, finding other guys, making them beat him, which yeah. Jamal Murray couldn't do. KCP couldn't hit a shot. And these guys were all over the place. The only one who kept the Lakers in the game was Michael Porter Jr. He was the only one that kind of like could play last night up until the fourth quarter, third and fourth quarter when Joker said, all right, it's time. It's enough is enough.
Yeah.
It's time for me to take over the game. And so the Lakers should still be confident. Maybe, you know, there's one thing that will probably give the Lakers confidence. I will say this, even though they've lost 10 straight, nine with LeBron, they still have some things they can lean on. In 96 minutes, they've won. They've been leading 67 minutes of the 90 minutes. 96 minutes they've played.
Yeah.
That's 70% of the time they've had the lead. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when they go back in today and look at the tape and say, hey, there's still light at the end of the tunnel, although I don't think there's light at the end of the tunnel, being that you've lost 10 straight, Denver's not going to lose 4 out of 5 games. I just don't believe it. They've done it once this year, though. So it can happen. But I just think psychologically, they're in the Lakers' head. No matter how big a lead, no matter what the Lakers seem to do, D'Lo played well. You asked, well, is D'Lo going to play well? He played well. What are we getting from LeBron and AD? They did their job. So what's the excuse now? Who's the scapegoat now? This is about as a perfect game of game the Lakers could have played up until the last quarter. They were up double digits going to the fourth, and I just don't see how they get back in this series. Not so sure.
Mr. Laker fan, what you got?
He got nothing today, Skip.
No, I got a lot. You can go from a lot of different angles. Today. Obviously, right, we blew a 20-point lead in the third quarter. We had that. You figured we could carry that into the fourth quarter to some degree. That didn't take place.
No.
You know, AD, for one, got into foul trouble. All right? So that kind of affected the way he played down the stretch in the fourth quarter. He had one shot in the fourth quarter, and he missed it. Obviously, LeBron James did a much better job. As I said, he won't have back-to-back stinkers in the fourth quarter, and he didn't.
You were right about that.
He came to play.
For the most part, you were right.
Oh, God, Skip, come on, stop. D'Lo gave us everything that he could. He shot the ball extremely well. Once upon a time, I think he was 6 or 7 from three. All right? So he erased that game one.
Yep.
When you look at it, though, Denver shot 23% from three, but they hit him when they were supposed to. That's the thing.
That's the difference.
That's the big difference. You look at field goal percentage. They were 44% from the field goal percentage while we were closer to 49%. So in all of the box score, the categories, they either was behind us or slightly in front of us. I don't understand how we got to the fourth quarter and everybody forgot how to play except LeBron. Everybody forgot how to play. Where Murray all of a sudden figured out how to play. When you look at what they scored in the fourth quarter, 20-32, they accounted, between Joker and Murray, they accounted 21 points in the 32 for Denver in the fourth quarter. Mm. That should tell us something from a scouting standpoint going into game three. If we look at game one, game two, and back to last year's Western Conference Final, and even some degree this year, when they get into the last 7 minutes of the damn game, those two cannot. They cannot start to cook. But for whatever reason, we allowed that to happen when we didn't earlier in the game, Skip. You know, and I know you look at the Michael Jordan moment, just like I did with LeBron. KCP on the ground. He didn't shove him like MJ, but he got him off of him.
So he went flying. I think it was a little subtle.
Yeah, but it wasn't a yeah. MJ move out the way in front of the world. It was subtle. He lined it up perfectly. I'm sitting there at home, said, oh, he's about to knock this blankety blank.
And it didn't come down to that, though.
No, I understand that. Like, it didn't come down to that.
Well, it did. But I mean, if it goes in, we're having a different conversation.
I wanted it to go in, obviously. I wanted it to go in because I just figured it was getting ready to go in. Then, dang, it didn't happen. Now, on the defensive end, when Murray gets the ball, they don't call timeout. He pushes it up the court, starts to his left, goes to his right. AD gets on him, and I was asking Paul, is there anything Anthony Davis could have done? Could he have forced him to more to LeBron? Could he have played the step back?
Nothing he could have done.
And you said nothing he could have done.
He hit him with the Paul Pierce step back, game over. Nothing he could have done.
But his was a lot faster.
Time out. If we're going to start at the finish, let's go there. Because I got a big issue with this. I need LeBron bleeping James to take Jamal because he was supposed to have Jamal.
He did take him. They set the pick.
He allowed the switch. He
switched. He was on Joker.
No, he just faded back. Blast through the pick. I got him. Because clearly he's going to shoot it because he always shoots this shot. Mm-hmm. I got him. Wherever he goes, I got him. I'm going to fight over the pick, and I'm not going to let him do that to me. And instead, you leave your big on Jamal, and he's going to abuse him, and he did.
Yeah, but if he switched there, no one – if he switches right there, you're going to wind up with D-Lo on Joker, because when Joker went to switch, D-Lo was either going to take him because Anthony Davis was already out there. You couldn't. There's no possible way LeBron could have fought through that. There's no possible way.
Oh, there's a big one.
So right here's the screen. He switches on the Joker. But right there, Skip, you got the self-proclaimed best defender on the planet. Right there. You got a seven-footer sliding with a guy who's shooting a jumper.
But you know, that's a mismatch for Jamal, and he knew it. He knew it. I got this because he can't get out here with me quick enough to really defend me when I fade away. And that's, again.
That's not nobody would have guarded that. Nobody, even if LeBron was on him with same fadeaway, you talk about a guy who's like 4 inches shorter, that would have been an easier shot.
Because if he get up too close, he's going to get fouled.
Yeah, if he get up too close, he's going to get fouled. He played with distance, didn't allow him to turn the corner. He challenged the shot. Jamal Murray is one of the more clutch players in our league. And there was the way he was rolling in the fourth quarter, there was nothing they was going to do. When he hit the shot, I wasn't shocked. I was like, he just hit the one to tie at the free throw line, another step back. Then he came back. You see how calm he was. He just dribbled, looked at him, looked down, and was like, I got this. Game over. And now the Lakers are devastated. Devastated.
Okay. All right. So everybody says you bang on LeBron too much, and I'm going to bang on him again because he deserves it this time. He did some all-time great things in this fourth quarter. And to Keyshawn's point, you said yesterday, there's no way he's going to follow this up with another stinker in the fourth, and he did not, except for the bigger picture. The bigger picture is they were up 20 with, 10 minutes to go in the third quarter. They were up 10 going to the fourth quarter, and they were up 6 with, up 8 with 6 minutes to go. And that's when LeBron had hit the back-to-back threes, if we had seen him, because I want to give him credit for this. He was a 41% shooter during the regular season. And to his undying credit, he did hit back-to-back threes. And I thought, oh, here he goes. Now he's got this. And when he made the second one, they're up 8 with 6:10 left in the game. Up 8 with 6 minutes and 10 seconds to go. You have to take that game home. Yeah. So here's my point. If you give Magic Johnson a lead at Denver against the defending champs going to the fourth quarter, if you give him a 10-point lead, I promise you he'll get the game home. If you give Kobe Bryant a 10-point lead going to the fourth quarter, I promise you he will get the game home. However it has to get home, he will get it home. And LeBron, I always say, has the highest IQ in basketball. You have to get it home to the fourth quarter, and you have to get your big man re-involved because he takes one shot with 6:56 left. If we could see it, it's just a
One shot.
It's just a jumper that he takes. I think we got the AD one miss. He gets one shot in the fourth quarter. This is AD, and he creates it on his own, and he missed it. And that's it. That's all you get from a guy who in the first half made 11 out of 12 shots and scored 24 points in the first half. Yeah. Through three quarters, he was on fire because they kept pick and rolling. Denver couldn't defend it. Denver did not have an answer for that pick and roll. I didn't see one pick and roll attempted in the entire fourth quarter, and I don't know why. Maybe they have some
They had a
internal
few pick and rolls. They just didn't go.
I'm talking about an executed pick and roll that got a shot. I didn't see one.
Yeah, LeBron went left on a pick and roll, finished the layup with the left. D'Lo went left. Finish. Remember when D'Lo hit the left hand later?
He did.
Layup on the left side. They kept running the same play. It worked, but they didn't go back to it.
But they didn't get AD open for the jumpers that he was getting, especially in the first quarter when he was just cooking Joker.
They ran the play because I know the play. But what they did was they stay home on AD on a double pick and roll, and they allowed the layup. That's why AD didn't get open, because when they was running that pick and roll the first half, they was helping off AD. He was popping to the free throw line, making his move. So they was like, we'll stay home on AD, and they gave up the layup. So they was taking the lesser of two evils, but at the same time, it was like, which one do we give up? Do we give up a layup to D'Lo or AD who has it cooking?
So with a minute and 26 seconds left, LeBron made a good – it was a bad play by Jamal. LeBron made a great play and took the ball away, and he is gone, and Jamal just sort of has to wave at him because he's 6'9 versus 6'4, and he dunks it on him. Here's the play, and I thought, you know what? This is signature. This has got – this is a classic LeBron game that people are going to be talking about for years to come because it's written all over it. And I thought, okay, here we go. We got it. Keyshawn's going to be right. And Denver just wouldn't quit because they just immediately went right back down and scored. And D'Lo did get his layup that you talked about. LeBron had a layup.
Right.
And yet Denver would not back off because Jamal just kept on keeping him back in the game. Yeah. So it comes down to the Michael Jordan moment. For those who don't remember that game six moment, I was there in the front row in Utah.
It certainly looked like it, but it was,
different
circumstances, but
This was different circumstances. We're talking about game six of the finals, but this was a crucial game, too. Here's the Jordan moment. There's a little push-off.
This guy here, Skip.
And he holds the pose, and the people up there are horrified in the end zone seats in Utah.
Man.
That was
pretty.
Jordan had just stolen the ball from Karl Malone over in the corner and dribbled it all the way up by himself. Scottie Pippen's calling for the ball wide open on the wing. Mike says, no, I think I got this. Okay, so the point is, it looked. I immediately, when KCP went flying, I thought, this is a Brian Russell moment. It looked just like it.
Yeah.
And LeBron gathered himself, and he goes up and just left it a touch short. Well,
boom, right here.
Okay.
See, remember right. I told you, Paul?
All right. You got to make it.
I said that, Paul. I said he right there. He took his time. It was like a free throw line. I just felt it was over. I stood up at home.
All right.
The other two were tougher. The other two threes.
I've said from the start, he just doesn't have the clutch gene. He doesn't have the closer gene. This is a closer's game.
It just didn't fall, Skip, man. Come on now.
But some guys make that shot, and some guys don't make that shot. Would Magic have sat right there and made that shot? I think so. I'll never know, but I think he would have. Would Kobe have made that shot? I think so. Would Michael have made that shot? I know so. Okay, right. I'll give you those three. But the point is,
that's the harsh reality about sports, though.
It just is. And it goes the other way, and Jamal does what Jamal always does. He is this kid is something. He is a fourth quarter terror. And just you have to understand, He was 3-for-16 going to the fourth quarter.
He tried to give the Lakers the game.
He was 0-for-4 from three and wound up 0-for-5 from three because he misses 1-3 in the fourth quarter. But with 9:19 to go, he finally got a little lay-in to go. He couldn't even make his layups.
Yeah, between him and KCP, yeah, they for sure was trying to give us the game.
He couldn't make a three, and he couldn't make a layup.
Couldn't make a layup. So he makes, if we could see the string of shots that he started making. Once, as you always know, Paul, once you see the ball go in, even if you lay it in, this is
that's the first
shot.
One right yeah, there.
That's the first
then
one.
He got
I'm
to
like,
the line. I think when he got to the
now
line.
Here he goes. Yeah. And here he goes. These are all step backs.
Now he started cooking. I knew it was a wrap.
Up and under. Yep. And you just start to know, uh-oh, this guy.
Oh, yeah. Right here. Yeah. Right to tie it back up. That was the tie it back up.
Okay. Here we go again.
For the win.
That's ball game. As Paul says, he called the game.
He called game. Yep.
and it was game over.
I mean, this was just unbelievable to me because I just knew the Lakers was going to win this game. I mean, I'm thinking like, all right, up 10. And when LeBron hit those two threes, I'm like, all right, he's about to take over. But then Joker comes back. Not enough needs to be said about what Joker did because we were so fascinated on what Jamal did in the fourth quarter. Do you understand? Joker had 27, 20, and 10.
It's ridiculous.
27, 20 and 10.
Yeah.
You know how many times that's been done, Skip? It's been done 8 times in the playoffs.
Yep. And he's got 4 of them,
and
right?
He's done it 4 times. And he's done it half of those times.
Yeah.
Like, not enough has been said of him keeping it close and just giving Jamal the opportunity right there because he almost blew the game. There was one play to where he came down and he tried to draw the foul on LeBron and throw up the 3 when they were down 3. Do y'all remember that?
Yeah.
And if anybody had any kind of awareness where the ball was, the Lakers get the ball, they probably win. Go to the free throw line. So he throws up the 3, trying to draw the foul on LeBron. Aaron Gordon gets the ball right here. He gets the ball somehow. If Austin Reeves gets the ball right there, the game's over.
It is.
Somehow he tiptoes the baseline, doesn't go out.
Yep. No, that's a big play.
This is a huge play right here. I'm thinking, like, what just happened?
Yep.
And then Michael Porter gets the 3.
To tie it.
Let's just say if Austin Reeves didn't even go for the ball, Aaron Gordon gets it and just lays it up. You're still up 1. But for the simple fact that he tiptoed the baseline, had the wherewithal to get the ball out to Michael Porter and ties the game back up.
That's a championship play to me.
That's a championship play.
That's how you do it.
And that's why this team has the Lakers' number. That's why this team is the Lakers' daddy. And that's why this team is going to put the Lakers out possibly by sweep.
Mm. Y'all don't know about no sweep, but
I just don't know how you psychologically. Do you understand the plane ride? I've been on a lot of teams.
We going home, man.
No, I've been on a plane on just losses. I don't remember losing a game like this in the playoffs, like a heartbreaking game up 20. But I do remember losing, and I remember those plane rides was about as quiet.
Absolutely.
As going to a funeral.
Yeah.
I mean, you just don't have. On the way to Denver, they got music, card games, food, high five stories. Going home. You probably couldn't hear a pin drop, and they probably got no sleep last night.
Yep.
I mean, it's going to be 2 days of no sleep, and it's just...
not going to be 2 days of no sleep. They didn't get no sleep last night because they got home late, number one.
I'm telling you.
And they got to get up and go get treatment today. They're going to rest up this afternoon. We fine, man. Stop it.
To lose a heartbreak.
Sending them false narratives out there like that.
No sleep. No way they sleep.
So, Keyshawn,
2 days of no sleep.
If I told you in two games at Denver, Anthony Davis has averaged 32, 13, and 4 assists. And LeBron has averaged 27, 7 rebounds, and 10 assists. You'd say, okay, that's
But you also, again, those two dudes going to push the other two out the way.
Yeah.
You got to look at the other guys and participating.
Yeah.
D'Angelo showed up last night. Austin Reeves, whatever, he's still got to get hot. He's still got to figure it out.
Wait, Skip, on top of those numbers, D'Angelo's averaging 18 in this series.
No, I said, but you are averaging 18, but the shots that you made last night versus the one in whatever he had the other night, that just basically balances everything out. Because that first night, he killed us, man. That's why everybody across Lakerland was wanting him out of there if we could before game 2. Everybody wanted him gone.
I looked at this game and I was like, there's nothing else. I can't think of a game plan. I can't think of nothing else the Lakers can do right now. LeBron played perfect. He said in the first game, I'm going to set the tone early. This game, I'm going to sit back, take them in the end. Now LeBron has to be conflicted to, like, how do I approach this next game?
Yeah.
Like, do I go early? Do I go late? Do I, like,
but again,
how do I have something
about LeBron and AD, though?
Okay, so to your point.
It's not.
Paul's brought this up. There were two possessions mid-fourth quarter. Game's still teetering. And LeBron brought the ball up, and you could see he thought to himself, okay, I need to let somebody else get involved here. But they don't run a play. The ball doesn't move. He just goes and sort of hands it to Austin Reeves like, okay, you go. And you can see Austin Reeves' body language like, really? You want me to do this now? Okay, I'll try to create a play here. And he tries to create it off the dribble and winds up with a bad shot and missed it. Then a second time, LeBron says, Austin, here, you do it. And he tries to create, and it winds up in Taurean Prince's hand.
And he takes a bad three.
And he takes a bad three.
Right,
okay?
I remember
and
that.
It happened on back-to-back possessions where LeBron was, I don't know if he's actually listening to you, but he's hearing what
he's
you're saying.
He's trusting his teammates.
Yeah, so he's saying, I got to try to get others involved. But they don't do it through supreme, beautiful ball movement. Right. It's just like LeBron says, okay, I'll go and hand the ball to Austin and say, your turn. Yeah. Go make something happen.
Well,
right?
To Austin's credit, he's actually good with creating his own shot or off the pick and roll. But not Prince. Not Taurean Prince. You got to create a shot for him.
So we'll get to just how much the Lakers have left in the tank, if anything. But now they have to win 4 out of 5, and that's going to be pretty tough against the defending champions.
It could happen.
I got 74 miles left in my gas tank, and I'm trying to get to Vegas. I'm not going to make it. I got 74 miles in my gas tank.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Here's what Joel Embiid said in the locker room after the Sixers blew a 5-point lead with under 30 seconds left to go down 0-2.
We just want to know, so, you know, we good. We're going to win this series. We're going to win this. We know what we got to fix. We did a better job today, so we're going to fix it. But we're the better team, and we're going to keep fighting.
Okay, Paul, can you see the Sixers coming back to win this series as Joel all but guaranteed?
I mean, if they can fix something in their heart, because
that's a good point.
The Knicks been doing to them. They've been out hustling them, playing with more heart, more physicality, outworking them. And when it comes down to effort and stars being stars, of course, Philly had their stars. They played like stars, and it wasn't enough. Jalen Brunson is not going to continue to play and shoot this bad. But what the Knicks will do, they'll continue to play hard and continue to put the effort and continue to get to out-coach Philly until Jalen Brunson comes along. And I just think, you know, sometimes, you know, there's pressure at playing at home and you feel the jitters, but when you get out on the road, it's kind of no pressure because you're not expected to really win or do much. And I truly think that he'll play a lot better on the road. But I just think with the way Joel Embiid is moving, it just seems like he can't elevate. They're putting him in a pick and roll. He can't rebound in his space.
Yeah,
he can get you 30 points still, but he can't get back on defense. And the pace slows down. It's just like they dribble up and they wait for him to get down court, which takes times off the clock. And I just don't see that issue get any better. They'll have some momentum early in the first, maybe second quarter in Philly, but I just think ultimately the Knicks are a better team. Not better talented, but a better team. And they're going to beat Philly in Philly. And I truly believe they'll win the series.
Philly's favored by 4.5 on Thursday night, right? They go down the road, up the road, however they say it on the East Coast on 95. There is no real travel. Joel Embiid's not getting on planes across the country, none of that sort of stuff. So he'll get the maximum treatment that he needs to be ready to go Thursday night. If you had anything tweak your knee or any type of bruise and then you re-aggravated it, it's going to hurt like hell the following day. And it's still going to feel a certain way. But when you've gotten to be able to rest it for a couple days in a row and get that treatment, you come back out Thursday night if you Joel Embiid, and you feel a whole lot better. As long as you don't re-injure it in the game, I think Philadelphia wins game three. Game one, prior to Embiid getting hurt, they had their way with the Knicks. They just did. Even last night, they had their way with the Knicks until Joel Embiid couldn't get up and down the court. Whatever that means, right? Whatever it kicked in, if he's healthy enough to go and play and rebound and do the things defensively, they're going to win the game. As you always tell me, Paul, the team with the best player, more times than not, they win the game. He's got the best player on the floor. He's the best player on the floor, even though he's hurt. He's still the best damn player on the floor. And his running mate, Tyrese Maxey, he's the second best player on the floor.
I buy that.
Because Jalen Brunson isn't playing well.
Yep,
so I got two of the best players out of all the 10 that's on the floor. Mm. And I'm supposed to lose at home? Mm. I don't think that's going to happen in game three. Mm.
You know, you'll say I'm making too much of this, but Joel is still the leader of this team. He's the elder statesman of this team. And I don't love him doing the whole interview hanging his head down where you can't see him. I just want him to hold his head up with pride and look everybody in the eye and say, hey, we'll see him in Philadelphia, and we got this. And he's just speaking to the floor, and I'm like, come on, just hold your head up. Come on. If you're the leader and the tone setter of the team, you're not sending me a strong enough message that we do got this, because – it feels like you're not sure if you got this because you're not sure of your knee.
So you drew all that from a man not looking up at reporters in the
eyes.
I
just don't love it, because I believe Keyshawn Johnson sitting in the locker room would have held his head up and said,
I approach things differently.
We'll be back. We'll be back.
I approach it differently.
Yeah.
Of course I'd say we'd be back.
You would.
I mean, we lost to Philadelphia in the regular season, and both me and Derek Brooks said, we'll see y'all again. Don't worry about us.
There you go.
And we beat them in the NFC Championship game.
Yes, you did.
But everybody approaches it differently.
No,
I can't draw from him holding his head down as if he don't believe. He believed because he said we're the better team.
We said it to the floor. I just needed a conviction. I needed eye to eye. Are you with me?
Yeah, I like that.
Yep.
You got to give your team confidence as a leader.
He got confidence in him.
I think,
hell, the man is out there on one leg.
I think it was a combination of the loss and the way they lost, and on top of him not being 100% that kept his head down. But I truly believe that Joel Embiid believes that they can beat them.
100%.
I do.
Well, who doesn't? I mean, seriously,
Dude, I think everybody was cooking them in the first half, the first time around. He gets hurt because he did something that you only do in elementary, because you're bigger than everybody, throw it off the backboard, go and dunk it. Then he gets hurt. They're not the same team the second half.
They weren't.
They come out, they playing well, they up in the second game. Then all of a sudden.
But remember, in the first game, it took three Josh Hart threes in the fourth quarter for them to get home.
Yeah. I have an answer for Josh Hart.
Yeah, and by the way, Josh Hart shot 31% from three during the regular season.
And the scouting report said, go ahead, let him shoot.
Let him shoot, okay? So, look, the point is, weirdly, I feel more confident in the Lakers beating the Nuggets in game three than I do the Sixers beating the Knicks. Mm-hmm. The Knicks started growing on me last night, because about 10 times in the fourth quarter, I thought, Sixers got this. And then the Knicks said, no, you don't have this. Mm-hmm. And I hark back to your favorite coach, your father figure coach, Bill Parcells. What does their record say they are? They're the two seed. Okay, I thought my Dallas Cowboys were the two seed, and the record didn't say it with that, but they backed into it. Mm-hmm. The Knicks won it. It down the stretch, they rose up and took the two seed in the East.
They did.
And they're pretty good, and they think they're pretty good. Are they better than the Sixers? No. But to your point, to open this show, when we first did the Knicks earlier, do they play better basketball than the Sixers play right now?
Yeah,
yes, they do. They just play better. They play better team basketball. They play with more tenacity. They play with more physicality. And, man, I think
can they take this act to Philadelphia, though?
Well,
I think so. I mean, they've been doing it all year. I have not been an endorser of the Knicks all year long. But it just gets to a point to where, like, they just keep doing it. They just keep winning. They just keep finding ways to grind games out. And you're wondering how they do it. They went into Boston late in the year. And I know Boston wasn't really motivated to win, but they did play their starters most of the game. And the Knicks went in there and beat them. And it's just like, something has to give. Like, something has to give. It's either, you know, they play hard. They took direction from this little guy who's a superstar in this league, and I've been in denial for all year, but Jalen Brunson's a superstar in this league.
Yeah.
And he should make all NBA probably like first or second team. Mm-hmm.
So he's all NBA superstar in the league, right?
Yeah.
So would you say, because as you have educated and told me and Skip, and we kind of know this anyway, but you reinforced it, that role players don't play well on the road. So if it's Jalen Brunson,
players play better at home.
Okay, so Jalen Brunson is the superstar of the team.
Yeah, I believe
him. And you got a whole bunch of role players around him, and they going on the road.
Right.
But so they're going to have to play. Josh Hart's going to have to play in Philly like he played in MSG. He's going to have to play that way. Mm. Can he do those things? Could DiVincenzo do the same things in Philadelphia? In the postseason, mind you, not in the regular season, on the road, because those two I would consider as role guys that play their role. Can they do those things in Philadelphia?
In order to win on the road, you have to have some unsung heroes. So, and I have to believe that Jalen Brunson isn't going to go 8-for-29 on the road. I mean, I just think there's just a certain level of concentration, a certain level of just knowing what it takes on the road to win from your superstars. You know,
Brunson gives you what he normally would give you.
What he's normally giving you is 8-for-29.
No. I mean normally, like the all NBA Jalen Brunson.
So that makes
Can
up
the other
for the
guys
lack
play
of
well.
So that makes up. So if Jalen Brunson plays the way Jalen Brunson knows how to play, that makes up for the lack of production he doesn't get from his role players on the road. So I don't need Josh Hart to get 21-15 because Jalen Brunson goes for 40. You see what I'm saying?
He is highly capable of doing
that. Yeah, he's capable of doing that.
Yes, he is.
And so that's what superstars in this league do. They take pressures off your role
players
on the road.
Okay, now, speaking of Philadelphia, where did Jalen Brunson play college basketball?
Villanova.
Okay, and where did Josh Hart play?
Villanova.
And
DiVincenzo. Philadelphia.
Philadelphia. DiVincenzo's from Delaware, but it's next door.
That's at home for them.
Yeah, it's home.
Home.
You don't think they're going to be ready for this? You don't think they're going to feel a little better for this road game than they feel for most road games?
Yeah.
It'll be a little more special to them?
Yeah. I think they look forward to going home. As I look forward to playing in the Staples Center, seeing that this was home, I look forward for that. I look forward to that, Keith. I look forward to getting wins.
I've seen your numbers against the Clippers and the Lakers, especially when you play for the Clippers.
I look forward to coming to the Staples during the finals and getting wins. I look forward to that.
Well, y'all cheated and everything
else. I'm looking forward to that. So I know these guys, they played college in Philly. They're gonna have a good fan base out there. They're gonna look forward to that. This is a good, you know, how far is Philly from New York? About 100 miles or something? 200 miles?
Less than that, I believe.
Less than that?
Yeah.
I've driven it a number of times.
It's only about an hour.
Hour and a half, right?
Yeah, about an hour 40 minutes.
Right.
Okay. Can't wait for what's coming up next. Been waiting all week for this. A great coach is about to be in our midst. Ron Rivera joins us. We'll talk some Commanders. We'll talk some Dallas Cowboys. And he is next.
Nice.
Ron Rivera has quite a football resume. At Cal, he was the Pac-10 Defensive Player of the Year. In Chicago, he played for a defense many think was the greatest ever, those 85 Bears. In Carolina, Ron was twice NFL Coach of the Year in 2013 and again in 2015 when he coached the Panthers to the Super Bowl, of course. And Ron Rivera joins us now. Good morning, Coach. It's a pleasure to have you here.
It's great to be here, Skip. Thank you.
I got to ask you, did it feel even a little bit strange that you went from coaching in Washington to to interviewing with Jerry Jones for the Cowboys job after that coordinator vacated to go take over and succeed you in Washington. Is that a little bit weird to you?
It was, but it was very interesting. You know, I've had a tremendous relationship with the Joneses and the Cowboys, you know, always competing against them every year for several years. So I've gotten to know who they are. And so sitting down, talking about their football team, I thought was a really good experience for me. I really appreciated it. And I do like the way it did go. I thought Mr. Jones was tremendous. Mike McCarthy was really good about it, and it was a great conversation. And you know, it was an opportunity to also get a sense and feel for what else is going on in the league.
Mm. Would you have been a good fit there, do you think?
Well, I believe so. Yeah. I really do. I'm a football coach, and I enjoy the game. And, you know, the thing that more so than anything else is this game is about the players. And you know this, Keyshawn, as well as anybody, that if you've got players, if you've got people in place, you know, now it's really a matter about getting them to do what they need to do, and that gives them the best chance to win. I really love the opportunity potential that Dallas does have right now.
Okay, but Philadelphia, through the offseason, has made every move, and Jerry's done next to nothing. Well, how do you sort of factor that into the equation?
Well, I think more so than anything else, they've always done stuff through the draft.
That's what they do.
Yep, and they've had their success. The one thing I see them that they need to do is they need to go out and do a little bit more in this draft. They've got to go out and find the offensive lineman they need to restock, shore some things up. They lost their center in free agency. I mean, that's known.
To your ex-team.
Yeah. Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. They're aged at the tackle position on one side, and they need to most certainly find some young depth and some young players that can step in and be starters for them. Mm. I think the thing that they need to do, too, is shore up that running game. You know, is that combination of the backs they had last year going to be good enough to go forward this year? Will Pollard step up if he comes back and becomes the guy? And if not, who's their answer? So these are questions
they've got to draft somebody.
Yeah, they do. They've got to answer these questions because what happens is at the end of the year, there's way too much pressure on Dak.
Yeah.
For Dak to do too many things. Mm. If you run the football successfully, especially in the playoffs, that gives your quarterback a chance to be successful.
Mm. You know, Coach, I've been knowing you for a long time, obviously, and your work it speaks for itself. Two-time NFL Coach of the Year with the Carolina Panthers. How difficult, though, was that job in Washington for you to take that thing over? You go through name changes. You have to go through the unrest that we're dealing with in the country. Just all that, not even X and O football-wise, just off-the-field type stuff.
Well, it does become a big distraction, Keyshawn, more so than anything else, because you're no longer being focused on football. You're being focused on what's going on away from the team. And, you know, sometimes you try to make sure the guys understand we got to delineate what's important and separate it from what's interesting. Mm. And the interesting stuff was all that stuff that had nothing to do with football. So my time was being split. It was hard on the players because, again, this should have been about the players. We had a lot of quality football players that didn't get, you know, the recognition they deserve. They really didn't. And, you know, when you have guys that are being mentioned, that's one thing. But when guys become, that's important. And a guy like Terry McLaurin, to me, is a guy that should be always on the tip of everybody's tongue because how good a football player he is. Mm.
Is there even a little tiny part of you that looks at now Washington sitting with the second pick in the draft? Keyshawn loves Jaden Daniels, watched him grow up out here. It appears they're sitting on him. I don't know exactly how it's going to unfold, but do you think, gee, I could have had Jaden Daniels as opposed to Heinicke or Howell or whoever. You know, not that they were terrible, but they weren't stars. Right. They weren't quarterbacks who can take you places.
Well, I'm a little envious of their situation. I mean, they've put themselves in a great spot now. They've got six picks in the first three rounds. Yeah. So they have a chance to add some really young, quality football players. I think with what they want to do with Cliff Kingsbury's offensive mind, I think Jaden Daniels fits exactly where, you know, he needs. He needs a guy that can extend plays, can throw off platform, that can make plays downfield because he's extended that play. Mm. And I think that's where the fit is. I like him just as much as you do, I bet.
Yeah, I do. I'm not all that excited about Cliff Kingsbury and what he's been able to do offense. I hate the air raid offense. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that's exactly what they're going to run in Washington, what they did in Arizona. But I feel like, and you're a defensive coordinator, and you can speak to this more than I can, I feel like they put too much pressure on the defensive side of the ball. So if I'm a defensive coordinator, I don't want that offense because time of possession is going to hurt me significantly.
Well, but again, the threat of the ability of the quarterback to move the ball downfield by running it as well is really important. You've just got to have a quarterback that can withstand the punishment. Ooh. You know, that was the situation in Arizona. I mean, every other month, their quarterback was on the sideline. Now what's going to have to happen is if you do take Jaden and you do use that style of offense, he's got to be smart. His mindset's going to have to change about not just, you know, extending plays, but finding the right time to get down, the right time to get out of bounds. He's got to save himself, and that's going to be real important because, again, they've got to be able to run the ball successfully, and I like the running backs that are still there, okay? They've got to be able to distribute the ball. Well, I love the receivers they have, okay? So they have an opportunity, I think, to take that style of offense and get it going very early if they get the right quarterback.
When you look at the division right now, Philadelphia, the Giants, Dallas, Washington, just sitting off season because it's all on paper. We don't play until September. Yep. Who would you give the nod to in the division?
Wow. You know, based on what happened last year, you wanted to me, again, the nod still stays with Dallas. But based on what's been going on so far, you got to take a long look at Philadelphia. You know, Howie's not going to sit back. Howie's going to find more opportunities to add on to what he's done, and that makes them just as dangerous. So to me, it's Dallas, Philly right now. You know, Philly's on top, and I think Philly because of what they've done. But if Jerry has a good draft, pulls in the players that he's looking for, I think it can be right back into Dallas's lap.
Have you seen enough of Caleb to say you would take him over Jaden?
Yes, absolutely, because I promise you what everybody's done the first few months of this draft cycle is they've tried to find out what he can't do, try to find out all of his faults. And then the last month, they've probably sat down and said, okay, let's talk about what he does do and how well he does it and how it fits us. I mean, there's a lot of things that people are going through right now to find out, you know, if these guys are the guys. I mean, these top quarterbacks have been picked through, they've been dragged through, they've been pulled through. Now they're being looked at as to why they're our best pick.
So, speaking of quarterbacks, as you look back on your time in Carolina, and you obviously got to a Super Bowl, and then Von Miller said, okay, that's enough.
Yes, he did.
How do you, what will you remember about your time with Cam? You were up and you were down, and you, what are your sort of lingering emotions about Cam Newton?
Well, I still think Cam is during his time, he was one of the best players in the league. In fact, in 2015, he was voted the best player.
He was.
Tremendous athlete, tremendous football player, loved the game. And should still be playing. Unfortunately, the injuries caught up to him, and he never came back from that shoulder. And that's been the hard part, the hard thing to accept is this is a guy that if he could have stayed healthy, if he could have gotten that shoulder right, would probably still be playing right now.
I'm a Cam Newton guy. When I look back at Cam's situation, much like you talked about, with Jaden Daniels and any of these other quarterbacks, they got to protect themselves.
Yes, they do. Yeah.
Too many times we've seen, whether it's a Lamar or RG3 or just a running style quarterback, and a lot of the injuries aren't because they run the ball. The injuries are occurring in the pocket, not outside the pocket.
But as you know, Cam is a huge human being.
Of course.
Just a huge human being.
But it wears on you. It really does. I mean, again, Anthony Richardson for the Colts last year, think of what happened. It's already happened his rookie year. Cam really didn't get nicked up until later in his career. No. It's just once it starts, it's one after the other, and it compounds. That's what's happened to this young man already. And again, it's like you said, it doesn't just happen when they're running. It's also in the pocket.
Yeah, it's in the pocket a lot of the times.
And so a lot of it is about them learning and developing and understanding what they have to do to protect themselves to help their football team.
My fear for Jaden is he looks like he's about half a Cam right now, like he's slender, right?
He's a thin daddy, but he's thinner than Cam, but he's not to the point where you look at him and you see him in person, he's not a stick figure.
No,
he's got some muscle mass to him. He's just got smaller shoulders, bigger hands, and he's athletic. He can do some stuff. He's like a little less than a Lamar. Not as shifty and fast. Mm-hmm. He's got some of that same stuff though, for sure. I've watched him all the way since high school, Arizona State, obviously, LSU. Yeah. I've seen him in 7-on-7. I've seen a lot, and nothing gets to him. He's not bothered by anything at all whatsoever.
That's the key.
I'm excited to see wherever he winds up landing.
All right, Coach, so this man got to play and got to see up close and personal and practice against one of the great defenses of all times, the 2002 Bucks defense featuring our man Derek Brooks, John Lynch and company. You played with and for an all-time great defense. Make your case for the 85 Bears defense being the greatest ever.
Well, I think first and foremost, you go and you look at who's in the Hall of Fame. I mean, Tampa obviously has a number of guys that are in the Hall of Fame. with the Bears, you know, that group of guys from 85, we just added Steve McMichael.
You did.
Okay, you got Mike Singletary, you got Richard Dent, you got Dan Hampton. I mean, that's four of the 11 starters, and that's pretty good. And there, you can make some arguments for as to why Gary Fencek could be in, why Wilbur Marshall could be in.
Yep.
So that's two more potentially from that group. So, again, when you talk about great defense, like if I mentioned to you the Giants, automatically you think right off the bat of LT.
LT,
right.
Yeah. But then it's Harry Carson.
Right, but then keep going.
And then
defensive line, defensive backs.
Obviously.
Burt, you could go Harry Carson. I said that, right? You could go Carl Banks, a young Pepper Johnson.
Yeah.
Then in the secondary, I'm trying to think they had a corner. Collins? Wasn't it Collins in the secondary? I think it was a Collins in the secondary. No, they had a good defense. Yeah. Our defense always, I don't know. You got Sapp, got Brooks, you got John Lynch, you got Rondae Barber, Simeon Rice on the end coming off the edge, a healthy Booger McFarland. Then you got Dexter Jackson, who was the MVP in the Super Bowl. And then we had a bunch of rotating guys and Spears and those.
Did.
I mean, like, we had Shelton Qualls in the middle. Yeah. We had some real killers on the defensive side of the ball. Yeah. No question about it. So, Coach, I know you want to coach again. At what level? Would you entertain coaching in the world of college football and the craziness in the NIL space?
You know, that would take a long discussion with my wife because she works with the University of California, Berkeley on the collective.
Uh-huh,
so
uh-huh.
She understands what's going on with the NIL and NIL, and I hear it from her all the time. So that's something we'd have to most certainly talk about. But, you know, being in the NFL is what I've always done, and that's where I'd like to be and I'd like to probably return to. You know, there will be some opportunities next year that I've got to look at and see if they're possible. And if not, maybe this world of media might be the thing for me, and that might give me the opportunity to enjoy it. Because I'll tell you right now, from what I have right now, I have no stress, no pressure on this decision coming up on Friday.
Everybody always told me, Ron, I remember when Parcells, when I retired, and Bill wanted me to join him in Miami in the front office. When he took, you know, I was at ESPN 1 year with him, and then he took the job as the president of Dolphins. And him and I met, and we talked and went over it. One, he was like, it's going to be economic suicide for you, okay? Yeah. Two, you're going to age so fast that you're going to wish. Now, I'm just telling you this, and I'm like, yeah, it's probably not what I want to do. TV is probably a little more, you know, lively for me than you're going through. I've had so many friends, man, that have gone through coaching and stuff like that and that I played with in front office. It's like stress level is just so high.
Well, it's not for everybody, first and foremost. Secondly, you've got to be really strong in terms of, you know, being able to manage your time.
Yeah.
And understand that, you know, you are going to be taking from this part of your life, okay, and moving it right here. This whole focus, everything you do around football, that's where you've got to be. And then you have a little time over here. You know, what's interesting is, you know, when I was let go, this February, for the first time in 27 years, I took my wife on vacation in February. Hadn't done that in 27 years.
Beautiful.
February, I'm getting ready for the All-Star Games and the Combine.
Yep, that's typically what it would have been.
And you look great, and you look rested, and it's a pleasure to have you on television with us.
Well, thank you,
Skip. Maybe that's where you belong. So
we'll see.
We appreciate you.